everyone, and welcome to Crime Kooks with your hosts Emily and
Rachel, where we talk and theorize about crimes and perpetrators. In this episode, we will discuss the Unabomber, a man who, when it came to killing, did not discriminate. All right, so whenever he was younger, Ted Kaczynski was born. Get it?
Whenever that's insane. I did not know that's how that worked. Yeah.
He was born on May 22nd of 1942 in Chicago.
Wow, old.
To a woman named Wanda and a man named Theodore Richard. So, yeah. WandaVision. He had a younger brother named David who was born October 3rd, 1949. And he probably isn't very happy with his brother anymore.
Probably not, if he's even still alive.
Well,
this was 1949, geez.
Well, he was born. That's when he was born. They'd only be in their 60s now.
Really?
49, that would be the 50s. They'd
be in their 70s.
Yeah, sorry. Forgot it's, you know, the 20s. You know what I mean. So, Ted was described as a loner who excelled academically. So he was a smart dude. And, you know, smart dudes are always the ones who end up killing people.
Not really. I thought, like, the average serial killer, don't they have, like, average intelligence? Like, I know, like, a lot of the ones we talk about are really smart, but, like...
I don't know. I don't really, look into the average statistics of serial killers. I just go in depth with individuals. But when I think serial killers, I think, they had to be smart enough. Because, you know, like, Zodiac Killer, he got away with it, and he sent letters to the police. I mean, come on.
Until recently.
Well, yeah, until recently. Woo! But he entered Harvard at the age of 15, which is like a Sheldon Cooper sort of deal. Do you know who I'm talking
about? Yes, I know who you're talking about.
And completed his mathematics PhD when he was 25. I want to do that mathematics, actually, so that's
why did it take him 10 years? Is that how long it takes for a PhD?
PhD, I think the D is like a doctorate, so it would be 4 years and then an extra 6 years for the doctorate, right? I don't know. But that same year, he was the youngest professor to be hired at the University of California, Berkeley. So, you know, pretty fun. He's got a lot of good things going for him in his life. He's smart. He's hired. He's got a good job because university professors at universities make bank.
True.
So, in 1969, he quit and moved back home, and 2 years later, into a cabin isolated in the woods of Lincoln, Montana. And let's be honest, that's a lot of people's dreams. It's not really that suspicious.
It kind of is. I mean, like, listen, I don't want to live by people, but, you know, in the woods, that's so creepy. That is so creepy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but, like, if you're alone, well, I wouldn't really want to be alone. I want to have, like, someone with me.
The issue is, what if you're not alone?
So, he wanted to learn to be self-sufficient in all forms of life, but soon the nature around him started to disappear due to industrialization.
The Industrial Revolution! Which, I don't think that's right, but...
That's not right at all.
It's okay. It's a second
That was, like, a good 100 years
before. Shut your mouth! I'm right.
This sparked his eco-terrorism.
Eco-terrorism, yes.
Going back to his intelligence, his IQ is 167, and the average is 90 to 110. So this man, he's got a brain. He's got a brain on him. Nice little skull.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to have a good brain. But moving on, his crimes, he was called the Unabomber because it was short for University and airline bomber. So you get it? UN from university and A from airline.
Oh, I was wondering what was a UN. I was like, what?
Yeah, university and airline bomber. This is because his main targets was scientific universities, airlines, and businesses that participated in the over-industrialization of society and destruction of nature.
Because they have so many buildings, like, everywhere? Mm-hmm. Is it, do we know if that's, like, what took us home, or is it just, like, industrialization in general?
From the sounds of it, I'm pretty sure they didn't take his home because...
Or, like, the land around his home.
Right. Like, that's a whole... It would be the land around it. Like, they started to take away the forest and stuff, and that makes people not happy campers.
So he's a tree hugger.
Yeah, he's a tree hugger. On May 25th, 1978, his first delivered bomb went to a professor at Northwestern University. Which, you know, bombs, woo.
I mean, that definitely makes a statement. You hate the guy, blow him up.
Blow him up. Yeah, well, luckily the professor saw it, and he felt kind of off about the vibes. So he sent it over to the police, and which detonated the bomb. And it caused minor wounds only, which is, you know, a good thing.
So... He just calls up the police. Hey, guys, I'm getting some bad vibes from this package.
Right. No. But, like, that's a good thing, though, because the man's still alive today, and he probably wouldn't be if he, you know, just opened the box.
True. I guess they got there in time. I mean, he's probably lucky. He's probably pretty far away from the package if it only caused minor wounds.
Right. Well, Ted taught himself how to form bombs from untraceable scrap metal and wood. No electric tools were used, and everything was by hand. And it was the tool he used to, all the tools he used to build it, built by hand. So Ted's doings finally reached the FBI when one of his bombs was found placed on the cargo hold of a commercial airplane, which, you know, they don't take a liking to ever with bombs on airplanes. As I'm sure we're all aware.
Yeah, I think it's so cool that he actually did all that stuff by hand, because that's extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah, no, it's extremely dangerous, and he not only did he do it by hand, he did it with natural supplies that he gathered, and the tools he used, not only were they not electrical, but he made the tools.
Real man of the wilderness.
Talk about real Minecraft. Honestly, though, he just gathered some gunpowder and some sand. Put it on the crafting table, and that's what happened. That's exactly how that happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So, the first facility he... The first fatality he caused happened in 1985. John Hosner, a computer store owner, received a package with a bomb containing a makeshift shrapnel and died from his wounds, which is, a shrapnel is like a container with a bunch of mini bullets or pieces of metal.
Shrapnel. It's shrapnel.
Shrapnel.
It's one word. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm really...
Shrapnel can actually just be caused by regular bombs, though, like when it tears off little pieces of other things. It's just all those, like, little tiny debris that can fly everywhere.
Right. But I feel like what they mean by it is, like, it was this ball, right? And he had a bunch of tiny little pieces of metal that were really sharp in the middle, and then he was like, okay, so we're gonna set this off, and whenever it explodes, just shards of, like, glass are gonna go shooting everywhere.
That's probably exactly what he did. I mean, that's actually... You know, it's horrible, but, like, it's pretty smart.
It is pretty smart.
It did cause a fatality, so...
And it sounds like, from what little I know about bombs, that sounds like it would be the type that you could make by hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a spring trap.
See, the thing I think with his bombs, though, like, I think he's just trying to make a statement. I don't think he's trying to kill people.
Oh, no, he's definitely just trying to make a statement. He's just also, you know...
Damaging public property?
Damaging public property and trying to get rid of the people who are supporting it. I don't think he was against killing anyone, is what I'm saying. But, anywho, so. He took a break afterwards, sending only one other bomb out between 1986 and 1993. But in 1994, he claimed his second victim, Thomas Mosser, an executive at the Burson Marsteller public relations firm, and the company represented Exxon Videlix, a company that had an awful oil spill in 1989. And knowing him as an eco-terrorist and considering what happened with the Gulf of Mexico, you can assume that he was, you know, a not happy individual with them.
Yeah, basically saying the message. So I figured, okay, so I knew about the break he had taken. So that's kind of why I figured it was more, I guess it really wasn't guilt. I thought that it might have been guilt over killing his first victim, but obviously he don't care. I mean, he's already killed a second person now, we see.
Right, exactly. He's, okay, so obviously, like I said, and like you said, he doesn't care about killing people. And knowing that, you can assume he's willing to go to any lengths to get what he wants. Especially knowing how stupid some people can be whenever they make their decisions. Because as I said in the last podcast, if you're going to do something stupid,
be smart about it.
Yeah, good job.
I See? Know.
That's my new motto, I told you. Because it's really stupid, first of all, to make homemade bombs.
I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try it. Sure.
Well, I'm sure the FBI will love to hear more about that from you.
Oh, I'd love to tell them.
Oh, I'm sure, I'm sure. I'm not sure your mom would appreciate it, though.
It doesn't matter.
It does, though.
Next.
Next. All right, so in 1995, he planted his final bomb and claimed a third victim, making him an official serial killer. Because you're only a serial killer if you murder 3+ people. So I don't understand why you can be only a murderer if you kill 2 people, because you didn't murder 2 people. You, like, you know?
Repeat that again, but slowly.
So I don't understand how you can be a murderer killing only 2 people.
You mean how you're not considered a serial killer if you kill 2 people? So you worded that way too complicatedly. Like, that, this was completely unnecessary.
It was completely unnecessary in the best way. But yeah, what do you think?
I think, okay, I get why they say serial killer, because it shows a pattern. So 3 people is kind of like a, I almost feel like it's almost connected to, like, you know, a little trilogy of the 3 signs of a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be linked to something like that. Or, I don't know, maybe someone just likes the number 3. But I feel like you're classified as a murderer if you kill 1 or 2 people. But a serial killer makes more sense for more than that.
Right, I get it. And, like, if you kill 50 people, obviously you're a serial killer. But who drew the line at 3?
I don't know. You're going to have to ask them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, why wasn't, what's her name? Lizzie Borden a serial killer. She killed her family.
But she only killed 2 people.
Exactly.
But, okay. Yeah, it was in the same way, but it was in one singular event. So a serial killer has to murder 3 different people in a similar fashion in 3 separate events.
All right, but what if they kill 1 person, right? And then, like, a month later, they kill another person. That's 2 separate events and 2 separate murders that are both caused by the same person.
But that doesn't necessarily mean a pattern. You need a third one to verify if it's a pattern. 2 things could just mean 2 very similar events that occur in a similar way, but it doesn't mean that a pattern's forming.
Okay, but then here's the question. If they tried it on a third person and failed and it was attempted, would they then still be considered a serial killer?
No, because they didn't go through with the killing, but they would be classified as an almost serial killer, I guess.
All right. I had to know. But in 1995, the Unabomber sent a 35,000 word essay to the FBI explaining his motives and the ills of society, and they published it in the newspaper.
That's a bad move. That's giving publicity to a killer.
Well, you know, you say that, but also I'm pretty sure there was, like, a threat in it that was like, hey, if you don't do this, I'll strike again, which is, like, a thing people do.
The cops should just be like, bet you won't.
Bet. Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, also, who's stopping him? Tell me who's stopping him.
Oh, the police are trying.
They don't know who he is.
They're not doing a very good job.
They're trying. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild. This guy is a wild guy.
He is a wild guy. He's a wild goose chase, if you will. But many people sent in suspects as to who the Unabomber was based on the writing, which, again, why would you write it?
Yeah, that's another thing. Not only can you, there's like the handwriting analysis. So if it was a handwritten note, my guy, you can link it back to your own handwriting, or you can link it based on like writing styles.
Right. See, what you need to do is you need to go on a little road trip, right? And you need to go to a grocery store in at one of like every single state and get a different magazine from every single one. And they're all very different. So, like, a woman's magazine, but then also a sports magazine, but then also, like, a newspaper. And then you can cut out all the clippings, because if they link it back to the state, they can't specify, oh, he must be from this state because that's where he was. And if you only do the states around you, they can, you know, figure out, oh, then he must live in this area. But if you get it from every single state, it's going to be, like, a whole thing, you know?
Yeah, but, like, I feel like, can they just, like, check the credit card records of everyone who they're, like, a suspect is and who went to all 50 states?
I mean, if you pay in cash.
True.
And if you do it from a long enough period of time away. Because, like, he had that whole amount of time that he was just, you know, not doing anything. He could have done it on, like, baby trips. And plenty of people travel for work.
But that's, like, so much effort for no reason.
It is so much effort for no reason, but it's not for no reason, because then you're less likely to get caught.
Eh, or you could just not send the note.
Yeah, that's fair too. That's fair. Anywho. So, his brother David, you know, the younger brother that I said he probably doesn't like anymore.
Yeah.
The reason he probably doesn't like him anymore is because David described Ted as troubled and included details such as that Ted had taught at the University of California at Berkeley. This happened to be where two of the bombs had been placed. So not only was he stupid enough to send a written letter, but he also decided to attack the place that he worked at previously.
You sure his IQ is 167? I'm thinking more of like 20 at this rate.
That's what I'm saying. Like, for a smart guy, he's pretty stupid. But that being said, David also provided where Ted currently lives, which is a 10 by 12 foot cabin, which is why I think it's so not good for him to build those bombs at his home, because it is a 10 by 14 foot cabin, and that is the only room. Like, he sleeps and eats in with all the explosives.
So, okay. He steps away from work to grab a little, you know, some munchies. Gets a little snack.
Some munchies.
It's like, yeah, I'm pretty hungry. Then all of a sudden, he hears, and then, I mean, like, that's, like, the last thing.
You really have to wonder, though. Like, there has to be some food, like, in his bombs. Like, just a little bit, at least.
Like, just, like, a little crumb of some biscuits he's munching on. Right, like,
maybe he drops some orange juice in the mix.
No, not a liquid. That would literally, I'm not making the sound effect again.
No, okay, I get it, but, like, he could have, like, you know how people, like, take the chip bags and they get all the little itty-bitty crumbs at the bottom by tipping the chip bag into their mouth?
Yeah.
Do you think he did that and there's just, like, little tiny pieces of, like, Doritos that were in the bombs?
I mean, you know, we'll never know because they exploded.
Yeah,
just sad.
Kind of high-key disappointing, but, you know. So finally, he gave them letters and documents Ted had written, and the linguistics analyst deduced that the authors were almost certainly the same.
Yeah, so, okay. This is the thing. This is why you don't send the stuff to the police, because handwriting is like a fingerprint, I feel like.
Handwriting is a fingerprint. Everyone handwrites differently, and they also have a different way of speaking, which is exactly how they got him, because there was something that he wrote in a previous thing that he also referenced in the thing he sent, and it was this phrase. And it's a commonly known phrase, and I don't remember what it was, and I wish I did because I used to have it on the top of my head. But he says it incorrectly, in both things. And it's like, well, most people know this, but if he's saying it wrong and the author's saying it wrong and then the writing's also the exact same and the writing's also the exact same, like, what are you going to do? I mean, it's the exact same person then. But at his small wilderness cabin near Lincoln, Montana, Ted was arrested by the FBI and accused of being the Unabomber. Imagine just, like, chilling in bed, eating your your Doritos next to your, you know, bombs. And then you get a little knock, and it's just, FBI, open up. And it's like, oh.
Hold on, let me finish my bag.
I wasn't ready yet. I haven't made a point. But, so when he was found, he had been surrounded by bomb-making tools and parts, as I just stated.
Probably his Doritos.
Yeah, probably a couple Doritos, too. And they also found 40,000 journal pages of bomb-making experiments and descriptions of his crimes. Which, again, why are you stupid enough to leave that laying around?
Well, it's his house, and it's in the middle of the wilderness. I don't think he's exactly expecting to, you know, FBI, open up.
Right, but also it's in the middle of the wilderness that he's fighting to defend because it's starting to go away. And, you have to... The bomb-making tools you can write off if you have a good enough lawyer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't write off the plans and experiments and descriptions of your crimes. It's in your house. If you're going to do it...
Guys, it was mailed to me by the Unabomber. I swear I'm not him.
That's what I'm saying. You can't be...
Anyways. No, okay, I just want to point out the fact that if a bomb went off where he was working, he'd kill even more of the environment, and by, you know, doing those explosions, he's probably also killing parts of the environment that were by the industrial buildings.
Well, I imagine because they have to be small bombs. They can't be huge.
But, like, still, you know? I feel like it's the shrapnel still caused damage.
But I'm fairly certain he built his own, it was a wood cabin, he built it.
It's damaging the environment, too. That takes wood from the environment.
That is. I agree. I totally understand. But it was all trees, you know, in his area, so he had an open spot. It wasn't close enough to any trees where it would...
Hypocrite.
I know.
He's a hypocrite.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's not. He's not the brightest for someone with such a high IQ, which is so disappointing. He could have gone somewhere in the world, and then he decided he was going to go and make bombs instead. But, you know, so they also found a single live bomb that was ready to be mailed. So if that wasn't incriminating enough.
Literally, what?
Right. Honestly, why did he wait? Like, just send it. Send it when it's done. Because if you were out and had already sent it, like, what are they going
to
do?
Well, maybe he was about to mail it after he finished his bag of Doritos.
That was a good one, Emily.
Like, you can't blame the guy. It's not his fault that the FBI just ruined his night.
That's fair. Rude. But his attorneys wanted him to plead insanity, and he refused. Which is also still stupid. Because if you plead insanity, I'm pretty sure they can't, like, give you the death penalty because it's not your fault.
Yeah, you basically get a sense of immunity because they just send you to a psych ward, not actual jail.
Right.
Like, they want to help you.
Your brother still could have come and hung out with you, but no.
Well, his brother kind of ratted him out.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He refused and pleaded guilty to all charges. That being said, John Krasinski? Sorry. Ted Kaczynski.
No. John Krasinski. Oh, no. He's a Unabomber!
Oh, no! More like the Scranton Strangler.
No, that's definitely Toby.
Right. T names. What's with T names?
Who knows? I guess they're all just bombers or killers or something.
Ted Bundy. Ted Krasinski.
Don't name your kids Ted, guys.
Whatever, like, Toby's last name was from The Office.
He was just Toby.
Yeah, he was just... It didn't matter. No one cared about Toby anyways. But at the age of 79 years old, he is still in jail with no chance of parole because he had 8 life sentences. So So he's not coming out of there.
Yeah.
Which I guess he's fortunate they didn't, you know, decide, hey, no death sentence. Which I think is more cruel to begin with, so I'm happy with it. but I looked it up while I was doing this research, and he is still alive in 2021.
Yeah, like as you said, he's like 79.
Yeah,
right?
He is 79.
Yeah, he's still in prison, still kicking. Old dude who literally murdered like three people with bombs.
I hope you all enjoyed this episode, and tune in next time to hear about Jane Taupin. And again, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Emily.
Don't be stupid and stay safe.